Dr. Google can't fix your knee. The Joint Relief Institute can. Fast joint pain relief, covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000, as in zero pain.
Thank you, Kim. Did you watch or listen to the White Sox game last night, Kim?
I did not.
Okay, I was listening to the White Sox game last night. I was driving around, and I happened to throw on the radio like I always do, and I'm listening to DJ do the game. And they're going, oh, man, I didn't have to see that. Are you kidding me? Stuff like that. And then I hear about this moth in the ear of the umpire. And so then I thought, okay, you know, we all get a bug in our eye or something flies in your nose or ear. It's no big deal. Then I saw the video.
Uh-oh.
This won't do it justice. Here's the audio from the TV cast of the video.
Something's going on here with Stevie Donahue. That can't be fun.
That's some freaky stuff.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my gosh. So the umpire's, you know, he calls timeout. He goes, there's something bothering me here. There's some bugs flying around at the guaranteed rate. So they take him over to where the trainers are. And then they put the camera in the dugout, and they're watching what's happening there because, you know, we're losing by 15 to the Yankees or whatever. So we're watching this, and the trainer has some tweezers, and he's looking in the air, and then he reaches way into the ear.
Oh, my goodness.
And pulls out a big live moth.
It was still alive and moving?
Oh, God, it was
flapping
happy.
Like crazy.
Couldn't be happier to be out of there.
Well, I'm sure the umpire was happy to have him out.
And then the umpire, because umpires are like superhuman, you know. They show no emotion. They show no pain. We're umpires. And so then he just kind of shakes it off and then trots back out to the ballpark. A lot of us would immediately go to the hospital, to a psychiatrist, maybe to a funeral parlor and make arrangements.
Throw up.
I know. Or to the toilet.
Yeah.
It was something like I've never seen before.
Ooh, that's just like making me itch all over right now just talking about it.
Yesterday I posted on Twitter a video of this ant rope. So in Brazil, some ants were trying to get to a wasp's nest. They didn't know how to get there, so one ant stood on the other ant's shoulders, the next ant stood on the other ant's shoulders, and slowly a rope of live ants built from the eave of a building over to where a wasp's nest was hanging. Think many tens of thousands of ants, all clinging one to another, forming a hanging vine underneath the roof, eave to this nest. It's bizarre. It's grotesque. It's fascinating. So Griffin and Violetta and I were looking at it, and they each shared their phobias about insects. That night, after we did that, they pulled a moth the size of a basketball out of the head of a human umpire, his head only that of maybe a cantaloupe.
Check the tape. It's the size of a basketball. He's not exaggerating.
It was pretty when they pulled that thing out, I thought, ain't gonna be nothing like this.
I'm wondering how it lodged in his ear if it was that big. You know?
Right.
How did it get down the ear canal?
Naturally know, like, this is the wrong direction. Don't they know, like, air is the other way?
Like falling down the rabbit hole in Alice in Wonderland.
It's the two tapes show, like, the polar opposite sides of the insect spectrum. It's like the ants know exactly what they're there for. They're working together. This moth is alone, flies into the ear of a man. There's no objective
moths are
there.
Dumb.
Well, but if you're a moth,
I thought ants were dumb too, though. But I don't know.
Well, I think ants are really smart. Ants will take over the world. They will be our new insect overlords. But because they're cooperative, ants are like, okay, I know this is going to suck for you, but we're all going to stand on your head, and then they're all going to stand on my head. But eventually, Tim is going to get the honey. And that's the deal. We may die, but Tim gets the honey. Ants, they're totally on board with that, assuming the ant's name is Tim. Now, in the case of the moth, it's just a moth. He doesn't know. He's like, oh, where am I? This is a thing. I'll check it out. Maybe there's some honey.
And how did he not break his wings in there? Like, my ear is small. I can't have that moth in there.
So if you want to see that, just Google moth in ear of umpire, White Sox Yankees. Because that really happened last night. And I don't know.
he went and got the headset that they do for instant replays and just put that on for the rest of the game.
I know.
That's what he should have done.
I would definitely wear a helmet. You know, I'm like, ain't nothing getting in any of my Orify. But the thing is, I think a lot of us have these fears that if I sleep at night, a spider is going to crawl up my nose and form a colony. Wasn't there an episode of Night Gallery or Twilight Zone like this, where the guy's head became an incubator for insects. That could happen. And it was on its way to happening. Maybe that was the moth's MO last night. He goes, okay, this is crazy. Everybody's watching the game. The Yankees are in town. I'm going to lay eggs inside an umpire. This is the night. I don't know. I don't know what the moth was thinking. But Violetta was expressing to us after the show yesterday, but before this happened, her sort of phobia about insects. Am I right about that?
Yeah, I'm getting better, though. I can get rid of them if they're in my way.
Okay. May I just tell on you, though? So V and Griff are talking, and Griff is as sort of timid about little tiny bugs as Violetta is.
It's very common. You expressed such shock at the fact that we were like, I don't really care for bugs.
We weigh 150, 200, 100 pounds. Human beings are 6 foot tall. If you were a bug and you saw a mountain coming at you, whose chances do you like?
But he's small. He can go anywhere. They're so little. That's what creeps me out.
Would you rather be you or a mountain? You would rather be the mountain, right? So humans almost always win. You got to get that inside your head.
I know that. It's not rational. It's just they're gross. I don't think I need to, like, print out a study about grossness of bugs to prove this. They're gross.
Okay, I'm just trying to help you here, really. But you guys were... So here's my tattletale on Violetta, then we'll take a break. But I want you to text to 312-981-7200 what happened to you. Just tell us if something like this has happened to you. 312-981-7200. They pulled a scorpion out of your eyeball or something. But so Violetta says, I'm much better about insects now. Recently, there was a fly, and I was able to... trap it with a paper towel, right?
No, my shirt. I was doing laundry, and I had a shirt nearby.
Yeah, so you trapped it with your shirt, but then you weren't capable of actually completing the deal.
Well, I had it trapped underneath a certain area of the shirt, and then I was like, my sister was there. I'm like, Brenda. She's like, what? What's happening? I'm like, come over here. I have a fly, and it's stuck underneath this shirt.
What am I going to do?
What shall I do? So I was nervous to lift the shirt because I knew I was going to lose it. Plus, then I might touch it. So my sister did this technique where she just started patting it a little bit to get rid of the wings section of that. Then she grabbed a tissue. Bam.
Problem solved.
Yeah.
Okay, it's 1:14. We'll pause here. Let's talk about what's happening in Ohio, in Columbus, in Ohio Congressional District 12. Where are the votes right now? Details on that is coming your way.
Something's going on here with Steve Donahue. That can't be fun.
That's some freaky stuff.
Oh, my gosh. That's some freaky stuff. Understatement of the night. That can't be fun. At least it got out. Moth removed from the deep into the ear of the umpire at last night's White Sox and Yankees game. So this is in the Columbus Dispatch in Ohio about the 12th congressional district race. The best window into the Republican mindset after Tuesday's special congressional election between Troy Balderson and Danny O'Connor may have been expressed by the head of the GOP super PAC that spent more than $3 million to help Republicans save a seat the party has held since 1983. While we won, they wrote or said, this remains a very tough political environment, and moving forward, we cannot expect to win tough races when the candidate is being outraised. That was supposed to be their congratulatory message about the GOP candidate, but essentially they were saying, don't expect us to keep bailing you out. And those words from Jack Torrey, who wrote about it in the Columbus Dispatch. I just wanted to catch up on that race today. Jack, you're on WGN. Thanks for joining us. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you today?
Real good. So what's the status of the last ballots? Is the counting over, or where are you guys?
Well, there are some provisional ballots that still need to be counted, but it's very unlikely that it would change the outcome of the election. It appears that Republican Troy Balderson has won the special election, and he will hold that seat through the end of the year. And then in November, he and Democrat Danny O'Connor, the same two candidates, will face each other for the two-year term that begins in January. So we're going to go all through this again, and there's no question that this turned into a referendum on President Donald Trump. This is a district the Republicans should never have trouble winning. They've held it since 1983, and except for 2 years before that, they've held it since the beginning of time. It is very solidly Republican. It's got a lot of rural areas. It's got a lot of suburbanites. It's just never should have happened. And the likeliest explanations are, of course, President Trump, who has managed to antagonize a lot of moderate Republican men and women, and quite frankly, a really bad job by the state Republicans in organizing absentee ballots and getting out the vote efforts.
Yeah, I read in your story that the Democrats got the absentee ballots out earlier than the Republicans did. Did the president's words about LeBron James resonate in any way or not?
I don't think it had much of an impact. I mean, if you like Trump, you loved what he said. If you don't like Trump, it just gave you another reason why you don't like him. James is more of a hero in Northeast Ohio and Cleveland. And if anything, Trump, by saying he's not as good as Michael Jordan, might have had more of an impact than anything else, because Michael Jordan is not popular in Ohio for a number of reasons that have to do with the Bulls beating the Cavs in playoff games.
So you've got this special election on Tuesday, but you're right, the two are going to square off in November, so it's really bragging rights, right? I mean, the message has been sent that the gap has been closed. The very same two candidates are going to run again in November. And again, I read in your story that one of the Republican leaders in that area said that the special election is not necessarily a harbinger of the general election, that he thinks the Republicans will be just fine. What do you make of that assessment?
I think that the Republicans are doing their very best to spin what was a catastrophic evening into a victory. They won. They held the seat. They held it by about 1,300 votes. Well, that's not very impressive. They have a problem nationally. The Democrats have about 60 target seats that are easier to win than this one. And all they need to do is, I think it's pick up 26 seats and they will take the House. And let me tell you something. The Republicans outspent the Democrats in this district about 5-1. They called Danny O'Connor just about every name in the book. They practically blamed him for, you know, Mrs. O'Leary's cow setting the fire in Chicago. I mean, they did everything they could think of, and he still almost won. So it's a and O'Connor himself is not a great candidate. I was kidding a good friend of mine. I said he could be the only Irishman I've ever known who's not a good campaigner. he took 2 weeks off after the primary election to go to Greece on a vacation, which just enraged Democrats in central Ohio, unless he was trying to nail down the Greek vote in the district, of which there is none.
37% turned out for this special election. That sounds high to me.
It is high. It was extremely high in the three counties that comprise most of the voters are Franklin, which is where Columbus is, Delaware, which is the northern suburbs around Columbus, and Licking, which is also a suburb more to the west, more to the east of Columbus. So these people were interested. You couldn't turn on your TV. There were ads all over the place. You had reporters parachuting in from every place imaginable. And then you had the President of the United States coming in and, you know, delivering his speech. And plus you had the drama that the governor of Ohio, John Kasich, doesn't like Trump, and Trump doesn't like Kasich. So it was like this was a made for TV order. I mean, you just couldn't make this stuff up.
Do people in Columbus, Ohio like John Kasich?
Yes, but he's wearing real thin among a lot of Republicans elsewhere in the state. I think probably John is reasonably popular in Delaware County, which is because he used to hold that congressional district. But he's so hard on the president that a lot of Republicans are starting to turn against him. John is thinking of running for president. I don't know how he can do it as a Republican, which means he's probably going to have to give it a shot as an independent, which is a very long, tough road.
You wrote that Mike Pence campaign for this Troy Balderson. Paul Ryan came out there. House Majority Leader Kevin McCarthy from California came out there. Obviously, the president threw his weight his way. And President Trump carried this district by 11 points in 2016. So just kind of a last question, what happened? I mean, is it literally that Trump is fading, or is something else going on in Columbus, Ohio?
No, the economy is booming. You know, if you're just looking at the state of the United States right now, things couldn't be better. I think a lot of moderate Republicans, particularly Republican women, really are turned off by this president and his style. And I think that they would like something a little bit more dignified, more presidential. And I think if you look at going into November, the Republicans know they are in a real tough fight to hold the House. My own view is they will not hold the House, and I don't think they're going to hold the Senate. Because it's going to be traded. It'll be one of the few times in the middle of an economic boom that a party's going to be losing a lot of seats.
Do you think this seat's in play? I guess that's a stupid question, but characterize...
No, that's not stupid. That's not stupid.
Has O'Connor got a chance?
Yes. Yes, he still has a chance, because I think more Democrats are likely to vote in November than they did this time. And the drawback is the Democrats have so many other seats that are easier to win. He may not get as much support. But quite frankly, the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, I don't know what they were doing. They weren't spending their money on O'Connor. They just sort of, like, you know, mailed it in for him. If they'd put another $1 million into this race, he might have won it.
Well, maybe they'll do that in November, right?
They might, but they've got so many other places that are easier to win than this one. This is a seat that if they do win, they'll hold it for 2 years, and the Republicans will take it back then.
Fascinating story. This is Ohio 12, the district which people were watching very closely, and it could not have been closer. Jack Torrey writes about it. Jack, listen, let's visit again. You're a great voice on the radio, and if you don't mind, I'll call you another day.
I've been told I have a radio face.
You know the game, my friend. Let's talk another day. Thanks.
Anytime. Thanks.
Jack Torrey from the Columbus Dispatch. WGN Radio News. Steve Bertrand's got that next. The news in 60 seconds. This announcement doesn't take 60 seconds, but it goes like this. As you may have heard, Tribune Media has ended its merger agreement with Sinclair.
The $3.9 billion plan for WGN Radio and TV and other Tribune properties have been put on hold by the FCC.
These aren't the FCC's exact words, but they felt there was something hinky about Sinclair.
Now Tribune is totally ticked, and they are suing Sinclair for $1 billion. With a B, as in Bozo.
As in, did these bozos at Sinclair really think their little scheme was going to work? No matter what, WGN Radio will still be WGN Radio. We will still be Chicago. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends, WGN Radio is Chicago.
Thank you, Steve Bertrand. I said we'd give away some Thomas Jefferson tickets. I want you to buy them, too, you know. That's WGNRadio.com/events. You'll be glad you did. Also, in the next hour, a Republican congressman from Indiana, Todd Rokita, is going to say hi. He wants to talk a little bit about the conversation between the president and the special counsel, Robert Mueller. I don't know that the two have actually spoken yet. Should they? Should he subpoena him, Mueller, to Trump, force him to come in? How is it that Rudy Giuliani and Donald Trump get to determine the terms under which the special prosecutor would actually interview them? I'm amazed how cooperative, how much of a negotiation that is. It would seem to me like if they thought you or I robbed a bank or stole a bicycle, they'd say, hey, you're coming downtown, and I don't get to say, well, where downtown? And exactly what questions are you going to ask me about bicycling? I don't think that's how that goes. So I honestly don't exactly understand this process. Yeah, we'll talk about that a little after 2 o'clock. There's one other thing we were going to do here, Griffin, and now it suddenly escapes my mind. Oh, I just wanted to ask Kevin a real quick question in sports. Hey, Kev, so that another football game tonight, right?
Yeah, yeah. This is the second exhibition, first official preseason game for the Bears in Cincinnati.
Yeah, so is Trubisky going
to
play?
Yeah, he's supposed to get a series, which means not a whole lot. Maybe hand the ball off twice and maybe drop back for a pass. We'll see how it goes, but you'll see him out there. He's scheduled to play, and most of the starters should get some reps, but they normally ease him in game 3 of the preseason schedules. Normally, they'll play a full half, and then game four of the preseason, they really don't play at all. So they kind of creep forward, add some reps here and there, but just a couple snaps for Trubisky tonight.
What, how many preseason games do they have?
Well, there's five, because remember they had that Hall of Fame game, which isn't it's not exactly a preseason, because you have your preseason schedule, which is a four-game slate. This is more of an exhibition, I guess.
So this would be the first of four, if you will.
Correct.
And does everybody sort of ease their marquee players in like this?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, this is how it's been in the NFL for as long as I can remember. Game three is normally when they play the most, and then game four, it's like, okay, we made it out of the woods. Let's not even risk it in game four. You better be ready for week one at that point.
Right, so then game three, we'll take a look at what we got. Game four, shut it back down, fine-tune it, and then really see what we have game one.
Right.
And when's game one?
Game one is, checking my schedule, that'll be Sunday Night Football, at Green Bay, September 9th.
Oh, that'll be fun.
Yeah, the first two games of the season are primetime. Sunday Night Football at Green Bay, and then Monday Night Football, Bears hosting the Seahawks.
What was the NFL thinking?
That's not fair.
That's not good for America. I don't know that that's a marquee game. Hey, I'll take it.
Yeah.
How many games are we going to win this year out of 16?
Well, I've been telling people my new rule of thumb for Bears win-loss projections is always subtract two from your win total, because they always let you down.
They're going to win 10, so it'll be 8.
So I was thinking like 8-8, so maybe 6-10, I guess I'll go with if I'm using my own rule, but 6-10, 7-9, right in that area.
Thank you, Kevin Powell.
You got it.
Catherine Lake, one of our commercial producers at WGN Radio, is in our studio. How many games do you think the Bears are going to win this year?
I'm sorry, Bears? Yeah. Are there Bears in the city?
So you and I were talking in the hall the other day, and I just wanted to share your story because maybe people can relate, maybe they've got advice. You're in a condo, right?
In a condo.
What neighborhood do you live in?
Uptown.
So you're in Chicago and Uptown. Mm-hmm. You're in a six flat.
A six flat.
So tell me a little bit about that.
Well, there's a duplex down on each side, the north and south side of the building, and then so that's two floors. Three bedroom, two and a half bath, and then above, two bed, two bath, two bed, two bath.
Okay, this is a story about, do you sell your condo? Do you sometimes get a flyer where somebody asks about your condo, about the rent, the taxes, even rent control, right?
Right.
And all of these things were popping up in our conversation. Tell me what is happening to your condo building.
Our condo building was solicited, and I think it was the only building of several on our street that was. They chose us, I think, to say, we'd like to buy your whole building. Everybody out. What's your number? And everybody went, oh, we don't have a number. We don't want to move. And half
Really? Because I think if somebody said, what's your number, I would say, I want to get rich.
$8 million.
Well, yeah.
Which we all knew was not going to happen.
Okay, so what happened?
We haven't got a number yet. They're going to come and take a look. We know what...
They're going to show you a number?
They're going to come and take a look and give us a number,
I suspect.
How
many units are in the building?
Six total.
So do you have to have full 100% or...
75%.
Right. So then you can have one holdout or two holdouts.
Well, and then nobody gets any money. Right.
And it means you could be forced to sell.
Because that's the key right there. I'm an original owner.
I think it should be 100%.
It should be. And we could change our bylaws, but now, of course, the genie's out of the bottle. Now, let's just find out what the number is. Let's just ask.
This just happened in River City in a much bigger complex where they finally got to 75%.
Wow.
And
did everybody get rich? Of course not.
No, but some people actually stayed and then kept their units and rented them for the new buyers.
Right back. At a higher rate. Of course, especially for my situation, yeah.
We cruised with some people, or maybe it was on a Bertrand trip. All I know is I was on vacation with WGN radio listeners in a swell place, and they were telling us about how they were being forced out of their building.
Oh, my gosh.
They had to sell.
It happens.
Even if they didn't want to.
Oh, yeah.
But so they negotiate with the building, not the individual tenants?
No, that's true. And
you're condo owners.
And we happen to all be owners right now. There is not a single rental in the building.
But then are they going to tear it down, or are they just going
to... Good question. There's no room to do anything but what it has. I don't know if they can split it up further, or they just want six apartments. I don't think they can deconvert...
But wait, they have to negotiate with you as the owners, right?
Yes, right. As en masse, though.
But how do you think? Well, your association has already agreed to negotiate with these guys.
Not to negotiate, to hear them out.
I would offer them a number. right? I mean, like, say you, the other thing is, isn't it, is it's not how much they're going to offer, it's how much do you owe.
Right.
So if you bought a unit for $100,000,
right,
and they come in at $200,000.
Well, that's a good deal.
That's a good deal.
I would take that deal.
I know that. Even though, say the market for it is about $200,000, so they're not giving you a real uptick. But if you only owe $100,000, somebody's going to come in and offer you the going rate. Yeah, that's not bad.
Well,
but say you, say you're close to the margin on your mortgage, that is, you owe about what it's worth, then an offer for the street value of it isn't all that attractive. Now, you really need a premium.
Yes.
Okay.
That's exactly right. It's not just for me what I owe. I'm 8 years old. I am not interested in moving right now, and I kind of want to hang on to this thing. I think this apartment's my daughter's. That's what I think.
So they also, you know, they could buy you up individually over time, depending how badly they wanted it.
Sure. How do you know that, Steve?
Because I listen to the Wintrust Business Lunch, and it's, I find all these very informative things.
I'm sure you do. I mean, no, what with you being the host of that and all. But
I only listen to half of it.
But she said 75% of her building only needs to agree to
if
this.
They're going
to
do it in mass, but if they want to do it over time, they can approach owner A, B, C over a period of years until all of a sudden they own 75%.
Oh, I see. Just one by one buy you all out.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, and that wouldn't affect you then because they could buy everybody out but you.
But
right?
Then if they
you
get,
don't care.
If they get the 75%.
Then what?
Then they can sell it again or take it over.
Yeah. They can, over time, they become the
votes.
Association, yeah.
They can own the building, but if you have a mortgage, so even if they own the building, you've got a note on that piece of property.
I know.
They would have to buy you out, it would seem to me.
It's so frightening to contemplate that you have gotten in bed with the devil in that it's an association. It is an entity on itself.
Well, you need to
change your bylaws that say only owners can live in the building.
Well, that was the other thing that was discussed, of course. Do we want to start doing that? But what if tomorrow my mother passes away and I've got to go take care of my dad and I'm going to have to leave town and rent? But I don't want to sell. I bought this damn thing.
And what if you can make your mortgage and then some on the rent?
What if I want to do that? And we've had people come and go, but we currently are all owners right now. Some new, some old. And the old ones, by the way, we bought at the high. That building was filled in November 2005.
That would have been the bad time.
We're just now beginning. The three original owners are just now seeing, oh, that's what I paid for it.
So somebody's coming in now going, all right, I'll give you a market. And you're going, no, I'm just now about to realize a little appreciation.
Thank you. And, P.S., now I'll add in the taxes. They want to double our taxes.
City of Chicago?
Yeah. I want double.
What are your taxes on a 6-flat in Uptown?
It was $6,000 for the last, since the crash.
How many square feet?
2,400 in mine.
That's not bad, $6,000.
Not bad, right.
They want to make it?
11.
In 1 year?
In 1 year leap. Yeah, we have an attorney working on that. I've heard that discussed on radio a lot.
Yeah, they did that on the Wintrust Business Line.
Yes. I don't know
what advice you have or if you've been in a situation like this. My number is 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Catherine is a commercial producer here at the radio station. You probably recognize her voice. She pops up in a number of things. But when she was telling me this, I thought, well, I just feel for you because to me, this is the only fair resolution to this. They ask you if you want to sell, and then you give them a number. And if they don't want to buy, I mean, you can negotiate like anybody does. If you had a house and it was on the market, you'd put it for sale for $1,000. Somebody would say $800. You'd say no, $900, and then you'd sell it. And if they don't give you the $900 or $1,000 you want, then you don't sell. You should not have to sell your house, is what I'm saying.
But everybody's concerns are different. Three original owners on the north side of the building, just seeing profit now. Three new guys who bought in
cheap.
12, 13, yeah, they got it on the cheap. One didn't. One got in just last year. Just moved. Doesn't want to move. You know, so there's a different consideration.
But the people
for
that got
everybody.
In on the cheap and somebody's coming in offering the market rate now, they're like, yeah.
Awesome. Thanks.
I'll put the sofa on the corner and we'll just go to another condo.
Right. And they're half my age, you know, so they don't care also because they're mobile.
Yeah, you've got stuff in there.
Yeah, I got stuff.
2,400 square feet.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
It's pretty good.
For a condo in the city?
Yeah.
Okay, 312-981-7200 if you've been to this. And then what was the thing that you were saying about rent control?
That's another thing coming up in Andersonville, I believe, Uptown. And I heard Rogers Park, not Andersonville. Rogers Park, Andersonville, and Logan Square are all, I thought I heard it on the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Yeah, there's a move toward that.
Thank you.
Trying to allow it in the legislature.
Right.
I think some wards have it on there, and maybe as a referendum coming up in the November election.
They want to get rid of the Rent Control Preemption Act from 97, is that right?
Right. As I recall, Catherine, I don't remember exactly, but Chicago right now can't have rent control.
Right.
But they want to bring it in because some of the affordable housing is disappearing by people buying up condos and reselling them.
It's so complicated.
I know that, but when people do that, I don't have a dog in this hunt, you guys, but if somebody comes in, buys a condo, and then they resell it, and they jack the rate up, and you guys can't afford it, and you're out, because other people are going to come in, why shouldn't they be allowed to do that? If other people have the money and want it, and I have the capital, and I want to own the building, and I want to make money, and they want to live there, why do I have to protect you, is my question.
It's the 75% rule. I don't want to sell. I own the damn thing. But that's that association entity that has a say.
If you've been to this movie, 312-981-7200. By the way, in our studio, Catherine Lake does some of the commercials that you hear on WGN Radio. And she's been telling us, me, off the air, we've been having conversations about condos and properties in Chicago and what's happening out there. Her building, you know, it's funny because every now and then, as a homeowner in some of my previous residences, there'd be a little flyer on the door, hey, I'm interested in buying. We usually threw those away.
Individuals, sure.
I just thought, I don't know who these people are. This isn't legit. Nobody, you know, I have been tempted, though, to go, hey, I'll say $1 million, and maybe you'll say $750,000. And
then we got a
I'll
deal.
Sell you the thing for $750,000. So I'm okay. You know, you're tempted that. But then I think, no, just don't go down that road. I throw it away. Throw it away. Your building didn't throw it away.
This is a little different because it's not just a realtor flyer saying, I can sell your, you know, I got my own realtor. This is a buyer for
Do you know who this guy is
building.
Or gal is? Do you know who these people are?
I have never heard of them before, but I do know them now.
They have a name, and so they're coming through your building to assess and see what it's going to be worth to them.
They want to see what our finishes are like, what level, they called it level of finishes, yes.
Tell them to shut up. Go away. You know, you get out of my house.
That's what three of us want to do.
Okay, so, but Catherine, maybe you will be pleasantly surprised that they're going to give you a number that you like.
Right, and then we destroy the neighborhood, thanks to us, yeah. Because a building full of rentals is not as valuable as a building full of invested owners.
And even in that best case scenario I'm imagining for you, then you got to pack everything up and move.
Oh,
you know what it costs to move?
Oh, don't talk.
Get a
Is it possible that he wants to convert it into a single family unit?
No, it's too big for that. That'd be nice.
Because there are some of those gigantic things. You know, it's like four flat, rich guy.
Yeah, there's one of those on our street, too.
The other end.
The other end. Where the condo end.
Producer Griff just handed me this story from the Tribune that you guys probably saw. Voters in three fast gentrifying Northside wards would get to weigh in on whether rent control should be allowed if housing activists who turned in thousands of signatures Monday have their way. The petition drive by several grassroots organizations comes as renters in Logan Square, Rogers Park, Uptown neighborhoods face rapidly increasing rents that are forcing families and longtime residents out of their apartments, and you're on the cusp of that, aren't you?
It's so fascinating. It really is. And I'm community organizers. I'd like to have that title. That's a busy person.
Well, don't mock it. I mean, these are the people fighting the good fight for you.
Yes, they are. They are. And they're trying to keep the color, literally and figuratively, in our neighborhoods
that we want. Rent control sounds like a New York thing, doesn't it?
It is.
You know, sky-high rates, it's unreasonable, so you have to literally impose a limit on how much you can charge for rent. I'd never thought about that as a Chicago phenomenon.
And it hasn't been one for a very long time, as Steve mentioned.
Doggone it. If you could just ride the wave, you're going to get some appreciation, right? I mean, but you should reserve the right to decide when you're going to sell and for how much.
Unless you have an association, in which case there's another person in the room making their...
So when are they coming through your joint?
Within a week.
In a week?
Within a week.
Eric is a landlord in Rogers Park. Hey, Eric, you're on WGN Radio. How are you?
Good. Yeah, I'm in Rogers Park right near the Indian Boundary Park. It's a family-owned building. My family's owned it for 50-some-odd years. I've got 27 units. The problem is you're the young lady just mentioned how much her property taxes are increasing. We cover the cost of most of these property taxes.
Whoa.
So every time her unit goes up, we go up.
Well, you're a rental, though, right?
I'm a rental, but I own the building. So as a building owner, when, as a property owner, as real estate taxes go up in the city of Chicago, I get dinged for every single unit I have in my building.
I get that. I'm sympathetic to that. I mean, so if you own that building and your taxes go up 40%, then I think it's fair to pass that along to your tenants, right?
Absolutely. And I'm very considerate of my tenants. We don't do a 40% increase because I do, like, I've had tenants that have lived in my building, some of them 20 years. I lived there as a child. Everybody in my family lived there at one point. So I try to be compassionate to them. But at some point, you have to separate business from compassion. And the city's squeezing us just as much as it's squeezing everybody else.
Is the city doing that right now? I mean, you know, there's been a lot of conversation in Cook County about valuations. And if you're in a nice neighborhood, they say they should be even more than they are right now.
Yeah. Well, we go through the legal thing, and we go and we hire a lawyer who fights the big battle and goes through whoever we go through and has our taxes reduced by a nominal amount. But, yeah, the 40% hits me just as much as it does everybody else.
Thanks for the call. Good luck to you, my friend.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
That's the landlord in Rogers Park. All right, Catherine, so why don't you, if you like, just check back with us in a week or so after they show you a number.
A number.
And
what's your number? Give me yours first. It's always who blinks first.
So what's the strategy on that? Steve, do you have a thought about that? If I'm selling and you're buying, you know, it's the negotiation for a salary or anything. Should I show you what I want or wait to see what you offer?
I would wait for the offer.
I was just about to say I should go first. I want to set.
Well, what if you ask less than they were willing to offer?
You typically underestimate the offer, I believe.
Okay, maybe so. But in Catherine's case here, I would advise to just
wait.
No, dream. So I was saying.
Oh, I have a number.
Say it's $1,000 that your property's probably worth.
I hope you sell more than $1,000.
Thank you.
Just as a figurative number, then I would come in at $2,000 or $1,500. You know, give yourself a markup,
right.
And then you're negotiating above where it is.
Right.
If you wait for them, they're going to come in and go, okay, how about $750? And then you're going to try and get to the $1,000 where it should be. So my strategy is you go first.
Yes, and this was something that I think you suggested that I immediately went home and did to suggest to my association, let's get two buyers.
Oh, that's right. Why are we dancing with this guy? Let's get another partner on the floor.
So my association response was logical. Let's just see what the number that they come with, and then we can go to somebody else and say, hey, you want to work on that number for us?
Yeah, maybe? Right. He's offering us $1,000, so how about you give us $1,250, something like that.
You know, it's not rocket science. It's bidding war, blah, 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 but it's complicated by that 75% of the association. And the difference between each individual unit and their concerns, their number.
75%, if they agree, then that's the decision, even if some of them don't like it, and that may be the position you're in.
Right.
All right, Catherine, well, good luck to you, my friend.
Thank you.
We'll be in touch. Tom Rokita is a Republican congressman from Indiana's 4th District. Reached out to us the other day, said, you know, I want to talk about what Mueller should or should not have to say to Donald Trump or vice versa. And we said, we'll take that call.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
Witch hunt.
Here's John Williams.
Witch hunt. Doesn't he know we already have a witch hunt going? Hi, it's John Williams. We're in the Allstate Skyline. Studio 18 stories above the Chicago River, overlooking beautiful downtown Chicago. Not as beautiful as it was yesterday. A little gray today, and the lake's not so pretty. Still not a bad view. We're here weekdays 1 to 3, Saturdays 10 a.m. till 12 noon on social media. I'm WGN King John. Just real quick, our good friend Willie Wilson, running for mayor, the businessman philanthropist who likes to give away hundreds of thousands of his own dollars and gubernatorial candidates' dollars, is running for mayor. And when Lisa Madigan, our Secretary of State, said, well, or our Attorney General said, I want to take a closer look at what's going on here, he called it a witch hunt.
Well, yes, he called it a witch hunt. And then I think more operatively, he said he's tired of having white people tell him what to do. I've got a little bit of the longer cut if you wanted to hear it.
Sure, if it's handy.
He said this just a couple of hours ago.
I was raised in South Jim Crow days. I'm just tired of white people telling me what to do. Tired. With my own money.
That's Willie Wilson earlier today.
I'm not sure that it's white people telling them to do that, but I'll finish that thought for him. White people are telling you not to buy votes. White people are telling you to follow the law. White people are telling you to let us make sure you're not breaking the law, and then you get to do whatever you want.
No, the law is checking up on that, not white people.
So that's where he is.
He tried to give some money to white folks, right? Didn't you get him to do that? Or
he said, okay, so I'll give it to some Caucasian. And then Wednesday, after he said that on our show on a Thursday or Friday, the following Wednesday, he was at which county office was
it? Cook County Treasurer.
So he went to Maria Pappas's office, and there he was handing out money to folks that showed up. They weren't all white folk. There were some Latinos, and there were some African-Americans. You know, at the end of the day, Willie Wilson is all the things you want somebody to be, right? A businessman who's successful and generous.
Hugely successful
and
hugely generous.
Really did pull himself up by his bootstraps and grew up in the Jim Crow era, and he did that. And he's legitimately handing out his own money because he wants to share. Then, God bless the man. I mean, really. Now, if at the same time he's running for mayor, and as he's running for mayor, he's saying, here's $1,000 for you, here's $500 for your property taxes, here's $500. You know, that's an interesting conversation about, is that buying votes? My take on this on the Mincing Rascals podcast was, I really don't care because he's not going to be the mayor anyway. So
that's the wrong answer. You can't do that.
I know, but I don't want to be the guy that told a man under those circumstances, you know, a rich guy in Chicago who wants to just give money out to help with property tax abatement. I don't want to tell him that, well, that technically violates a rule.
It's interesting. What if he was giving out, what if he was mailing checks to people who applied online or in the mail? Or, you know what I mean? It was done a little more formally rather than the image of him handing out cash.
Well, that was,
you know, if he was making charitable donations or grants to people in need. You know, you go to his charity, you apply, and then they send you a check.
That's normally how these things are done. And Christian McQuarrie in the Chicago Tribune and on our podcast said as much. Look, we know you shouldn't be doing that, but just don't do it that way.
Well, he wants everyone to see, because then the idea is, if he is mayor, maybe I'll hand out everyone money.
There's a better way to do that, and it's called under the table. All right.
Well, yeah. Legally, but under the table, right?
Right. Todd Rokita is in our studio now, the Republican congressman from Indiana's 4th District. Congressman, welcome to the show. How are you?
Hey, John. Great to be with you.
You and I are meeting in person for the first time. You just waltzed in. I appreciate you making it here.
Yeah, you bet.
You sorry you walked into this conversation?
I was trying to figure it all out.
Welcome to Chicago.
Yeah, thank you.
Where's the 4th? Where are you?
Well, interestingly enough, I'm closer to the loop into Cook County than all but two Illinois Republicans. So my district goes all the way almost to the northwest corner of Indiana and then goes south and east from there. So it's the biggest district in the state. And then I used to be Indiana Secretary of State for a while. So
ran for governor too, right?
That was a special deal. That was a 22 voter kind of situation. So I'm very happy to support our current governor. That was one of those situations where Mike Pence was put on the ticket, the presidential ticket, and he was also running for election, so they have to have a candidate. It was literally the state party central committee in Indiana, 22 people that picked.
So some of the issues then that are relevant to us in Chicago are relevant to you as a Northwest Indiana
Absolutely.
Guy.
Well, I mean, I'm from Munster originally, so growing up, you know, I thought Jim Thompson was my governor because of the, you know, I thought WGN TV. Sorry,
I got
radio
news for you. Jim Thompson thought he was your governor too.
You know, so yeah, there's a lot of connectivity.
So I wikied you. Here's your Here's the poop on you. It says that you were the legal counsel for 7 Florida counties during the recount for the George W. Bush presidential campaign.
Yeah, that's how I got into politics.
No kidding. You were an attorney at the time?
Yeah, and went down to Florida, recounted for the president.
You picked up, went from Indiana to Florida to say, I'm going to help George Bush beat Al Gore in Florida.
Correct. Well, I was actually a recount attorney from Indiana. So,
oh.
And, you know, and so I had that experience. So I went down there and made sure the Chads didn't get out of hand, that kind of thing. Remember that dirty word?
Oh, sure I do. Then 2 terms as Secretary of State in Indiana, 2002 to 2010. Vice Chairman now of the United States House Committee on the Budget.
Yes, sir.
You were, it says here, under environment, you do not accept the scientific consensus that human activity is the driving factor of climate change. And at a town hall meeting in 2013, you said the idea that climate change was caused by human activity is arrogant. Is that true? And have you changed your views on climate change?
Oh, no, I haven't. I mean, I agree that 97% of scientists polled have an opinion about climate change, and it's their personal opinion, but that doesn't mean there's 97% scientific consensus that humans have any significant thing to do with it. Now, the climate does change. I'm not saying that, and it's been changing for thousands and millions of years, and it is an arrogant thing to say that humans are in control of climate change right now.
Are they altering it? I mean, maybe they don't control it, but I mean, do you think that we're making it worse?
Well, I don't know that there's any. I haven't seen the scientific paper that supports that.
I'm a proud I'm proud of my A rating from the NRA.
Yep.
You got that? You support repealing Obamacare. We're just getting to know you here real quick.
Well, do it quick because I only have 5 months left in office.
You're running for re-election.
No. See, you're missing that. It wasn't the governor's race. I lost my Senate primary in Indiana. So in Indiana, and I think it's true in Illinois too, I'm coming back on my chief election officer role here, but I think you can't run. Well, in Indiana you can't, but I think in Illinois too, you can't be on the ballot for two things. So when you go for one office, you have to give up the other. Yeah.
Wow. Well, then what was the calculation on your part in that case? I mean, did you think,
I ran as a pro-Trump candidate.
I understand that, but maybe the thought was I'll lose, and then I'll lose my seat, but that's okay because I've got other plans. I'm going to go back to private practice anyway.
Oh, yeah. I didn't think anything about that, so we're going to figure all that out here in a few months.
What do you think, and you're a person who obviously knows a little bit about election law, Secretary of State, an attorney, and a member of Congress, right? So what do you think of the cooperation between the White House and the Mueller team? Should the president testify, and can he be forced to testify? What's your thought about all that?
Well, I think the president has, first of all, he has the right and actually has the constitutional duty to question his staff, the people that he appointed. So I don't see any problems there with what he talked to Comey about or didn't talk to him. I mean, that's his prerogative. That's why we elect leaders to run agencies. So there's that. I don't think that it's ever been tested at the Supreme Court level. Let's say that Mueller issues a subpoena ultimately to testify
right.
in this probe. I don't think that issue's been tested at the Supreme Court, so maybe this will be a case of first impression. I know Bill Clinton was threatened with that and then ultimately agreed, and that ultimately led to his downfall.
Richard Nixon was subpoenaed, though.
It was over documents, right? Is that the difference?
That is the difference.
Yeah,
so it matters what and how and who. Yeah. There are details.
But here's the thing. Think of it this way. What, 13 of the 20 or some number like that of the 20 prosecutors in this Mueller witch hunt, and that's my word. I share that word.
You like that word.
I love that word because that's what it is. It's a witch hunt. After a year and a half, that's what? What are you laughing at?
My producer's making a painful face. It looks like he has hemorrhoids right now.
Like I just ripped open the can of whoop-ass?
Well, I think that is happening right now would be better if we didn't call it witch hunt. But
I was listening earlier. That's why I said
go ahead.
So, you know, the point of the matter, why would you sit, if you're an attorney for a client, why would you sit that client down in front of 13 people that donated to your opponent's campaign? That are registered Democrats. I mean, the point being that Mueller should not have let those people in the investigation in the first place.
So okay. Are you arguing that Robert Mueller's a partisan?
By the way, that's the voice you're
coming.
Sorry, Congressman. Behind you is a TV set, and the guy in the top in the middle is our newsman, Steve Bertrand, and he's joining us.
I like to ask questions, but I'm afraid to be in the same room.
But, that's why we call him off-air talent.
But no, he's on air. Watch this.
Look, Mueller is appointed by Republican presidents, right? Are you calling him a partisan Democrat?
Mueller's a Republican. Rosenstein's a Republican.
You can call him whatever you want to call him.
You just did. You just called him.
No, I didn't.
I think you did.
Shh, watch this. The president has been saying that the Mueller team is a bunch of Democrats, the angry Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
He keeps counting the numbers. He's up to 18 now.
Mm-hmm.
But the FBI is largely Republican.
How do you know that?
Because I read it on an internet site.
Yeah.
Mueller is a Republican. Rosenstein was appointed by a Republican.
Because you're appointed by a Republican doesn't make you of one party or the other.
Just because you donated to somebody doesn't mean or that you somebody does not compromise
when you hold
your integrity.
Trust like that when you're in charge of investigating like you are. I used to do this kind of work. When I was Indiana Secretary of State, I was the white collar criminal policeman. We had investigations all the time, and we took extra pains to make sure when we were interviewing and we were hiring, that there wasn't partisan overlap or any kind of partisan bend to the people that we hired. For that very reason. So, no, professionalism does dictate, Mr. Producer. I'm sorry, I can't see you. You're behind me. You know, that you do take steps, especially in something that would be as high profile as this Mueller witch hunt has become,
so you would
to
be
make
happy.
Sure that you
so
don't we, have partisans investigating so, a partisan issue.
Can I then just go back to, because I said you said they were partisan, but your implication there was that Robert Mueller donated to the Democrats campaign, right? Is that what you're saying?
No. He has at least 13 people on his team that have. That's what I said.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, here's the question that I think matters the most right now. Should the president...
And therefore, it's discredited, this whole investigation.
To you. So should the president testify before the Mueller investigation? What do you think the answer to that is?
Given the situation, given the fact that there are partisans on this thing, that there are registered, not only registered Democrats, but people have donated to your opponent.
Yes or no?
I think the president's lawyers are right. Now, I don't know what the final negotiation is, so maybe there's some kind of negotiated outcome to it. Maybe that's fine. So I'm not commenting on that.
I don't understand why Mueller is so hesitant to subpoena the president. Maybe because that would fail. I know that it doesn't look good, and maybe that seems heavy-handed. But I think the circumstances warrant it. How can you have this investigation?
What circumstance? This is the whole reason for my resolution, which is why I want to come on here, right? I have the Mueller resolution that says put up or shut up. Come and divulge the evidence you have of any kind of the president's involvement in Russian collusion.
Yeah.
Or be done, because this could go on for a year and a half.
Tell me the exact details of that resolution.
That's it. It's pretty simple.
After this. Yeah. We'll pick it up here in a minute. This is WGN, and in our studio is our new friend from the 4th Congressional District of Indiana. We have not met Todd Rokita before, but there he is, the Republican from the 4th.
Absolutely.
And let's finish this conversation in a minute. In our studio, Todd Rokita is the Republican congressman from Northwest Indiana. He's, in that sense, a metropolitan Chicago guy. He's been the congressman there since 2011.
Yeah, came in with the new crew that deposed Nancy Pelosi. Yeah.
We were talking about whether or not Mueller, the president should testify or be forced to testify before the Mueller investigation. And you have a resolution that says what again?
It says, hey, in 30 days.
But it doesn't say, hey.
It says, look, in 30 days, produce evidence of what you were chartered to find out. And that is, was there collusion between the president or his campaign and the Russians?
What's the rush?
Because it's gone on for a year and a half, and it's distracting to the country, and it's distracting to the work of the
people. I'm able to do my job every day. It's distracting to the president. Yeah, but I don't know a plumber, a welder, or a school teacher.
It's also fundamentally unfair to have an investigation go on. And now, there have been indictments.
To go on this long.
Yeah. There have been indictments, but they have nothing to do with the chartered call, which was to find out if there was any collusion.
Well, so, you know, isn't that interesting, though? I mean, we all know how protracted and complicated this thing has been. And all of the avenues that have turned up, quite. And now...
I mean, the things that have complicated are Strzok and Comey, Strzok's mistress, and his obvious FBI bias.
How long
that has tarnished
typical,
the whole institution.
How long is it typical?
Now we're back with the off-air talent.
Well, he's
from
just out of your view. But
if you can hear me, I'm on air.
Yeah.
What's the typical investigation run? I mean, I know Ken Starr certainly ran longer than this one. I don't know about the others. Do you know what the average is?
I can tell you I did a very high-profile investigation in the state of Indiana when I was the chief financial white-collar criminal investigator there as Secretary of State. And it had to do with the governor. You know, so no, I'm not equating the two, but I'm giving you some example. And we spent under $1 million. We looked at more pieces of paper than the 9/11 commission did. And we got it done in, I believe, 6 to 8 months.
Okay, but I asked you what a typical federal special prosecutor would be. And I don't know the answer to it, but I think it's longer than a year or a year and a half.
Oh, I don't think that's right at all.
Okay.
Especially if you're not finding anything.
Well, found a lot.
How do you
not resulting in anything to do with collusion between the president, the president's campaign, and Russia.
Are you privy to what Mueller has? Do you know what he has in front of him right now?
I've been in a couple classified briefings, but no, I haven't. I don't know exactly what he has.
So how do you know?
But that's the purpose of the resolution. Put up or shut up. Say something to get this country focused and to bring justice, because that's what you're supposed to do here.
I'm not going anywhere.
A witch hunt doesn't A witch hunt lingers on. A professional investigation that seeks the truth and just what the facts are doesn't linger on. And this is in the lingering on category.
Congressman,
for sure.
What would have happened to your investigation of Mitch Daniels if halfway through they had told you to present your evidence?
Well, first of all, halfway through would have been a couple months in.
Okay.
But what happened?
We would have continued on until we found the truth, right?
Oh, okay.
But the fact is, we found the truth, and then we reported it out because that's what the public expects.
Do you want Mueller
and that's
to show
public
his
confidence
cards? Do you want Mueller to show his cards, or do you want him to end the investigation?
No, the resolution calls for showing your cards. Show us what you have that's leading somewhere and is justified in going on and bringing it to, or stop it.
I would subpoena the president and force him to testify. It's not clear whether or not that can happen. In an article I read this morning, they asked a half a dozen experts, constitutional experts, blah, 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 and there's no consensus on can they do that or should they do that. So we'll wait and see.
Hey, John, it's good to be with you.
I appreciate you coming into our studio. We'll follow the status of your, whatchamacallit, your thing that begins, hey?
The Mueller resolution.
Yeah, so is that getting voted on or what's happening with that?
Oh, we're gathering co-sponsors now, so which brings me to your airwaves. Call your representatives and say you want justice and fairness and you want this thing to either produce evidence, show us what you got, or to come to an end so the country can get on with its business.
Or I guess you could call them and tell them to take their sweet time and get it right.
If you can't get things right in a year and a half, then you have other problems, like incredible bias in your investigators.
From Indiana's 4th, Todd Rokita. Thanks for coming into our studio.
Yeah, you bet.
Todd Rokita, the Republican congressman from the 4th District, has a resolution that would ask Robert Mueller to show us what evidence he has against the president. That resolution is something he wants you to call your local lawmaker and support. We were talking to him off the air. He and I, and I don't know if you agreed, but he and I were talking, and I agree with him that I wish that the Mueller team, if it is true that 13 or 18 of the 20 investigators and attorneys working in the Mueller investigation voted for or donated to Democrats, I wish that they would have been more bipartisan about it. My own view is that does not compromise your integrity. You got to vote for somebody, and you can donate to somebody if you want. That does not mean that you will be a unfair or ineffective investigator, but optics being what they are, I wish that he would have gotten more Republicans.
How many people are working on the Mueller team?
I don't know, hundreds probably.
I don't know either, but I see that's the problem if you start to believe a statistic like that. There have been so many untruths through all of this that it's hard for me to grant the truth.
I know, and I'm quoting the president here on Twitter, which is dangerous, but if that's out there, I wish somebody would refute it with some other truth.
I mean, I asked him off the air then, John. I'm sorry, I interrupted you
again.
Fair
enough, but go ahead.
Because he did imply that Mueller was partisan, so I asked him off the air, I said, well, do you think Mueller is an honorable person? And you tell me, but he seemed careful not to incriminate Robert Mueller, and then he went back to the people who are working for him.
I just don't know why he's swinging so hard for the president on this one, and I'm patient. And the idea that this is a great distraction to the country, it is very upsetting. Digestion in America is poor right now, and it's because Donald Trump is president. But I think it's going to be bad as long as he is, and the investigation itself is the one thing that gives some of us some hope. So I'm not real upset about the investigation, and I think he could drag on for 50 years if it found the truth. I'm not impatient about that, but that's a partisan view, isn't it? So that was Todd Rokita's conversation with us a little while ago. If you're just joining us and wondered what that sounded like, you can check out the podcast at WGNradio.com that we'll put up from this show after the show. By the way, we also have a news click, and today's news click, the one that we actually had up yesterday for today, I guess this would be yesterday's news click, asked, should Alex Jones be banned from Twitter? That's our daily web poll question. We asked, should Alex Jones, InfoWars, be banned from Twitter? And 70% of you said yes, 30% said no. The new question is the popular film Oscar category a good idea? This is the weirdest thing. The Academy of Motion Pictures has said, okay, we have Best Picture. And the Oscars don't do Best Drama, Best Comedy. They do Best Picture. What was the Best Picture? And that's a source of frustration for a lot of people who sometimes don't like or even see the movies that are nominated or win. They aren't the most popular, if you will, films. So now they've said, okay, we'll have a popular film category. But I don't even know what that means.
I think they're going to call it the Everybody Gets a Trophy Oscar.
So what films get put into the popular film category? And they haven't said. They haven't even said what that popular film category criteria is. Like, is it the top 10 movies box office, the top 10 movies from Rotten Tomatoes, the top 10 movies that John and Steve liked? They haven't told us what that category is all about.
And do you want to win it?
Right. I mean, doesn't it seem like a consolation prize? Like, okay, you're not the... Because technically, Griff, you have more informed opinions about this than I do, but I think the Academy's Oscar is for the art of a great film, the art of a great performance. That's what we award. It's not about who made the most money this year.
Yeah.
So then what is the popular film category supposed to honor? Do you know?
Details are forthcoming is what they say. They said they will create, and this is the quote, a new category for outstanding achievement in popular film, and they'll reveal more about what exactly that means.
What is a popular film? What is a popular film?
A lot of people have speculated that this provision that they're, or this new category that they're thinking about adding is in response to Black Panther's success, because that's one that has really crossed commercial and critical lines. Everyone loved that, and it did huge numbers at the box office. Although it's not traditionally the kind of movie that would get nominated for Best Picture, critics loved it and raved about it too. And maybe they're trepidatious about the idea of it not getting a nomination or something like that, and that alienating people who thought, like, this was the movie of the year, and it's not even represented at this award show. Movies like that, or even Fallout, which just came out, like, the big movies that people do go to see, I think that would be part of what they're considering in adding a category like
comedies, this. Action, adventure movies, they tend not to do well. They don't get nominated. We all love to go watch those popcorn movies, and they don't get nominated.
And the answer to that, I think, is just, well, nominate them. Don't create a new category. Just open your minds about what can be Best Picture, if that's something you're worried about. Or just say, you know, we're going to nominate whatever we want. Just deal with it.
Go pound sand.
Yeah. And then other people, and I think this is interesting too, speculate that it has to do with the telecasts on ABC. This is one change that among many that they're thinking about instituting. They want to make it 3 hours instead of four. They want to change which awards are telecast and do some in, like, technical awards in commercials. So they want to change the broadcast in hope of bringing back viewers.
ABC does.
And part of that, they think, well, if there's more popular movies nominated or there's more space for them in
the show. They'll help the TV show.
They already expanded the Best Picture to 10 nominees, right?
I know, and that was, like, towards the same cause. Exactly. That's why they made that change, I think, too.
They're going to water themselves out of relevance.
But think about this. ABC is owned by Disney, and ABC is the one kind of involved in making these changes to their show. And what are the more popular films that would be recognized by this new award that ABC wants to push into their
Disney
telecast?
Films.
Disney movies. So it's like feels a little vertical integration. It feels a little corporate and maybe a little creepy. But it's hard to know because we don't know exactly what this would actually be.
Well, it's amazing that they have a reason for it. They must know what a popular film is, what that category means, and why they've done it. And to say, we're going to do it, and then all it does is generate negative buzz. Did they think people were going to embrace this? Without an explanation, it's only going sour on them. Now they're already in damage control, and they haven't even told us what the dang thing is.
Yeah, yeah. I don't get it.
All right, we'll see. So the popular film category. Well, did Jaws win? Did Star Wars? Has Star Wars won an Oscar?
Jaws was nominated for Best Picture, and it won, I think it won Score and maybe a couple other smaller ones.
John Williams.
Congrats on that.
Okay, but did any of the Star Wars movies ever win an Oscar? I'm sure they did not. I'll bet they weren't even nominated.
I don't know about nominations, no.
Yeah, so it's going to be Star Wars up against a movie with a dog or something like that. And, hey, I'm not looking down my nose at it because I can see why those popular movies are liked. And I also understand the frustration of people when the movies that do get nominated are about an amphibious creature that the lady danced with.
I was just going to point this out, though. Shape of Water made $200 million worldwide. That's pretty. That's good.
Yeah,
that's a popular movie.
I just don't understand that. I don't know many people in the Midwest who saw that movie and liked it.
That is totally your
mind.
That is
never
not backed by anything.
Your Honor, I want that struck from the record. Fair enough. Okay, different category of conversation here. Brian Tallarico is going to come on with us. Brian Tallarico from the Ebert. What's the name of the organization? RogerEbert.com. Brian Tallarico is a great voice in film in Chicago over there. He joins us on Saturdays sometimes, so he'll air this out a little bit. But I think I know what he's going to say about the popular film category, too. So did you guys see the story in Chicago? The police just recently, before the shootings that took place in Chicago this weekend, but at the beginning of the month, and maybe prior to that for a while as well, put out a bait truck. A bait truck is where you go park a semi on the south side of Chicago, and you lock up the back door, and you leave it there, and then you stand behind the bushes with your camera and your fancy cop equipment, and then you wait for somebody to come in and break open the lock, and what do they find there? Boxes of Nike shoes. And then they start to steal the Nike shoes, and then you arrest them. And this is seen as a means to crack down on the crime that's taking place on the rail yards on the south side of Chicago, because when those trains are parked there, guys bust open the train cars and they steal stuff in there, and it's a real problem for the railroad. Okay, I think they should try and stop people from stealing from rail cars. I do not like the idea of putting a semi-tractor trailer with a locked door on the back on a street corner on the south side, and then you wait for somebody to break in, and then you arrest them. If Chicago ever did not need that sort of policing, this would be the time. This, can you imagine a worse time for the people on the south and west sides of Chicago to have to sort of process that? What they need is more trust in the police. The police need more trust in the locals. And putting bait out like that for people is not going to help. I know you should not break into a truck parked on the south side and see what's in there. And if there are shoes, you should not steal them. I know that. I'm just saying I think this is a bad idea. I wonder what you think. Tell me your thoughts right now. Back to your calls in about 45 seconds. Give me a thumbs up when you're ready in there. 3, 2, 1. As you may have heard, Tribune Media has ended its merger agreement with Sinclair.
The $3.9 billion plan for WGN Radio and TV and other Tribune properties have been put on hold by the FCC.
These aren't the FCC's exact words, but they felt there was something hinky about Sinclair. Now Tribune is totally ticked, and they are suing Sinclair for $1 billion. With a B, as in Bozo. As in, did these bozos at Sinclair really think their little scheme was going to work? No matter what, WGN Radio will still be WGN Radio. We will still be Chicago. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends, WGN Radio is Chicago.
So what do you think of this idea of putting a bait truck out? The Mincing Rascals just talked about this in our podcast. Download the Mincing Rascals podcast. And I asked the gang, if they parked a semi-tractor trailer full of shoes in your neighborhood, what would happen? What do you think should happen? And what do you think should happen to people if they broke in there and started to steal the shoes? We'll start with Derek. You're on WGN Radio. Derek, what do you want to say? You're on the air.
I have a coworker. I'm a truck driver. I have a coworker who was driving a box truck on the south side of Chicago, stopped at a red light, and men jumped in the back of the truck looking to steal what was inside.
Man, what happened?
Well, he was, it's a smaller truck, not tractor trailer, so he was able to open the door and yell at them. And like I said, the stuff inside was not easily stolen in windows, but they didn't know that.
Right. Where did this happen?
If he opened that door and scared them and maybe got hit, got shot, stabbed, who knows?
When and where did this happen?
It was a few years ago, and I don't remember the exact part of the town.
Chicago?
Yeah, Chicago.
What do you make of that tactic? So the cops say, all right, we'll crack down on that sort of shenanigans. We'll park a truck there and jump out from the bushes and arrest them when they do it. What do you think of that?
Anything to help. to keep us safe.
Derek,
try to do our job.
I sure appreciate your call. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks.
Yep, drive safe. Ron, you're on WGN Radio. Ron, what do you want to say? You're on the air.
I agree with the you and the last caller about that. But put this in another perspective. Where white wealthy people open a legitimate business, say oil, gas, and they make a fortune, and they pollute the area. And this goes to Mike Pence and his family. They polluted Indiana for $20 million. Illinois has to pay $2 million. Kentucky has to pay $2 million. For the Pence family, dirtying up where they had a legitimate business, like a truck park, but their gas stations were parked. And they polluted, and now the people of Indiana have to pay Illinois. It's the same thing, but they get away because they're white and they're powerful. I know it's a little convoluted, but racism, that's what it is.
Okay, Ron, listen, I'm sorry, you just heard me cut you off, only because I want to get to more voices. We hear you, I know how you feel, thanks for the call. I'm going to Ben next, you're on WGN. Jump in there, Ben, you're on the air.
Hey, John, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to say thank you for what you said with this report. I think this policing tactic is not an effective way to stop crime. The old saying is don't tempt fate, so by putting a truck out there, you're just creating more criminals. You're not eliminating criminals at all. And I think this is a conversation that we need to have. And I think community-based policing is an important tactic. But doing things like this where you're just baiting a trap to hopefully catch a criminal, you might actually be creating crime and making it worse by doing this.
That's Ben. Thanks for the call, Ben. I'm glad you joined us. Hey, Tony, what do you say to that? I think you feel differently, don't you?
Yeah, actually,
Tony's cutting out, but he said, I like the idea, and if you're honest, you're good, you don't do that crime. Okay, kids, thanks for the call. Roland Anna, around the corner. By the way, the Mincing Rascals dove into this deep. I don't know if you're a regular Mincing Rascals podcast listener. I think you'll enjoy the roundtable discussion. The Mincing Rascals is the podcast that picks it up. Thanks to the caller who said, hey, there was a TV show called Bait Car. Ro, and I don't know if you ever watched Bait Car. It was on True TV. They put a car out there hoping somebody will steal it. Then they've got fancy trackers, and then they, I guess, chase the bad guy that stole the car. It's kind of like what they're doing on the South Side with Bait Truck, where they put a truck ostensibly filled with some goods, wait for folks to come and break in, steal the stuff, and then they arrest the bad guys in Chicago.
Yeah, you know, I've had this happen in my own neighborhood a couple of times where when I was doing construction in the house.
Yeah.
Where twice in my lifetime, I've had the crew come over to do something. And while they're in my house, their tools get stolen out of the back of their truck.
Really?
On really crowded streets in Chicago, too.
Wow.
It's like it's a whole thing. It's a whole thing in this town.
It is.
But it's also one of the most beautiful places on earth. So I don't know what else to do about that.
What are you guys doing on your show today?
All right. Well, I'll tell you what we got. We got the former Secretary of the Air Force to explain to us. This is just this hour coming up. All right.
Mm-hmm.
So we got the former Secretary of the Air Force to explain to us about the Space Force. Do we need it or not?
Will you put the echo in whenever anybody says that?
Space Force.
Probably need more echo. That's better.
That's on you, Anna.
Oh, boy. But the Space Force thing, you know, it's already a division of the Air Force, and is it needed to be a separate division? I mean, a whole entity in and of itself.
There's
a sixth branch of the military.
There's also a thing called the United States Space Command, USSC, which is the Joint Space Command of all of the military branches together. Because everybody does have a little bit of a play in it. Navy has a huge play. Army's got some play in it.
Mm-hmm.
The obviously, you've got the Air Force involved in it. So, you know, those and by the way, just to explain, that's something else that maybe the president needs to understand is that the Marines are, you know, part of the Navy, right? So that's like an important element here. So really, you only have three major brand commands, which is the Air Force, the Army, and the independent brand commands, which is the Navy, the Air Force, and the Army. And so, you know, this whole idea of, you know, a fifth and a sixth and a seventh and an eighth, and we need this. I think he just wants something branded to him is what he wants.
A legacy? You think he's thinking legacy?
Right. And he's an entertainer.
Well, he's got the steaks.
He does in the wine. That's right.
All right, I'm out of the way. Have a good show, guys.
So that's coming up in just a few minutes.